Session number 20588, Reel 2.
Walter Cuss, Reel 2. So, bridge building training was obviously important in Ireland. What else did they teach you that was going to, you know, become part of your repertoire when you went into the field?
Well, I was a driver myself. Well, I was driving different vehicles. Of course, we all done the same training, like. But I don't recollect any engineering work as regards minefields, not in Ireland. It was done on exercise. It was not for real, you know what I mean. You work in minefields out. But a lot of exercises are very complex on times. You travel about all over the place. Another thing, you used to get scares about the IRA. And everybody would be on the alert and doing 24-hour guards non-stop, that sort of thing. One particular thing, when we were in Ireland, there was a big scare in Belfast about the IRA, and we all moved to Belfast, and we were building sandbag emplacements in various parts of the city. Sandbag emplacements, and they were manned by machine guns, infantry manned guns. We built the sandbag emplacements. That sort of thing went on, things like that.
What other particular training did they give you in your engineering?
Well, as I said, mainly bridging.
Right.
Mainly bridging and exercises and that sort of thing, you see.
Tell me about, can you remember a particular exercise you could tell me?
Oh,
about?
Not really, so many.
Yeah. There's or so tell many. Me about them in general then. I mean, how long would these last?
Well, they'd last all 7 days at a time. Mm-hmm. And they were quite numerous, like, you know.
What did you know about them before you went on them? What would they tell you?
Well, they didn't tell you any much. You just went on with it, you see.
I mean, I'd rather you told me in your own.
Yes, I know, but I got to. You must realise this is a long time ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So where would the exercises take place?
Well, all over Ireland, over Northern Ireland. Mm.
So when you set off from your base, would you know where you were going to go to do the exercise?
No, nobody knew that. I'm going to say it was up to the commanding officers. They went to all groups and brigade headquarters and got all the information from there, you see. Mm-hmm. And it was boring, a lot of it, because you were idle for very long periods of time. Because exercise is not the real thing in a sense. It's a simulative affair, you know.
Mm-hmm. And would there be, what weapons would they have on the exercise?
Well, you carry have your rifle and the things that's associated with engineers, a rifle and bread guns, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
And on what might you be doing as engineers on the exercise?
Well, basic engineers support field company in the engineers in a division, infantry division, support the infantry. It was one engineer company to a brigade, and a brigade of infantry is three infantry battalion, three infantry regiments. One company would be attached to a brigade. And whatever the brigade wanted done, he might turn round and say, simulated, oh, the bridge is blown up there, you've got to build a bridge. And that'd be a folding vault bridge, or else a box girder bridge. Mainly a folding vault bridge. Because a box girder bridge, at that time, we'd probably been phased out, you see. So mainly it was what you call wet bridging. And that's, as I just explained to you, a folding vault bridge.
Yes.
You build this bridge in a normal sense that you do in action. And then they'd simulate a situation whereas, oh, the enemy attacking so-and-so and all the rest of it. And you'd go down to sort it out. And as I said earlier on, you would, every so often there'd be a scare on about the IRA. And what we were over there basically for was to, at that time, apart from training, was to make sure that everything was secure in the sense that on the border, you see.
So what did you actually see of the IRA?
Very little.
What was the threat perceived to be?
Well, the threat, you see, after Dunkirk, they thought the Germans were going to, basically they were sympathetic at that time to the German cause. You had a German embassy in Dublin, and no doubt they knew what was going on in Northern Ireland and so forth, and probably the IRA was sympathetic to them, probably they were, and they consequently we reacted in kind, and so far we held security and we made sure that everything was secure, especially army bases. And also was recapping, we'd done a lot of work on camps over there, building camps, and a lot of our chaps away on detachments for 3 or 4 months, especially the tradesmen, carpenters and people like that, building camps, converting linen factories and things like that.
Two army camps,
that's right. Yeah. Mainly in our own division, mm-hmm. for our own division, for our own infantry.
Were there attacks by the IRA?
Not as far as I know, no. Not connected with the army. I think there was isolated attacks, but not to deal with the army at all.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, did you do any special training, you know, signals or scouting or...?
I done training on air compressors, which was a vehicle, a Morris 1500 weight truck, which carried a cutoff so that you could disconnect the engine to operate the compressor.
And what would that be used for?
Drilling into for explosives.
Right. So how many people would be trained in that in your...
Myself and a driver, one to each troop or company, platoon rather.
Was that relatively new technology then?
Not in that way, no. It applied to the army, I should think, so yes.
Any other special training?
Not really.
Uh-huh, right. So how long were you in Ireland altogether?
Till 1941.
Right. So that was, what, a year or so?
18 months, I think it was, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah. What was the atmosphere like there? Did you feel you were being kept on the sidelines until they needed you?
Well, a lot of chaps got a bit bored in so far that at that time the army was in a very low ebb, generally. I mean, the Battle of Britain was on and so forth, and we were stuck over there. I mean, the only bombing that was experienced was in Belfast. Well, we were outside, a lot of bombs were dropped at York Street Station. Now, I can't recollect for certain, but I think some of our chaps went up there to clear these bombs. They hadn't gone off. In those days, no one thought that bombs been booby-trapped or anything like that. I think we moved some of these bombs. I couldn't be sure about that. But a lot of chaps got rather bored stiff because we were over there, and of course all this was going on here. We had out the Middle East, we would get pushed back here, there and everywhere. So a lot of chaps got bored about it, you see.
Did you get leave while you were there?
Oh, I had a number of leaves when I was in Ireland. You had to leave every 6 months.
What did people say when you came home and understood that you were in Ireland rather than...
Well, I don't recollect anybody saying anything, really. I mean, it was classed as an overseas posting, and so far you had green envelopes, you see, which was an envelope which was not censored. They relied on you not to put anything in there which you shouldn't put in there. And it was called an active service. They're on active service. That was an active service station, Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. In so far, it was unpredictable to what was going to happen over there, you see.
So what did you write home about?
Well, you couldn't write home much about anything, really.
Do you think your parents or friends had any idea what you were doing?
Well, I told them when I came home what I'd be doing. It's obvious I wasn't going to sit in the house say nothing. But, they used to ask me different things like.
Did you have friends who were at other places, you know, overseas or in this country? And
no, well, we were all together right through the war, more or less.
Right.
And that become, I'll tell you later about that when we come back to this country.
Can you tell me about the organisation and establishment of the unit in Ireland?
in Ireland. Mm. Well, the officer commanding in Northern Ireland was Lieutenant General Pownall, and he was known as British Troops Northern Ireland. You had the 53rd Division in the south of the country, south of Northern Ireland on the border, and you had the 61st Division up the north. In between that, you had miscellaneous units, such as British Troops Northern Ireland, or local troops. And the headquarters was being built, the headquarters for BT in Northern Ireland was being built at a place called Lisburn, near Belfast. And that's as far as I know, as far as the organisation at that time.
So, did the unit feel it had a sort of particular identity or sort of history, or, you know, was there loyalty to the unit?
Well, at that time, it was the 53rd Welsh Division. And at the beginning of the war, it was more or less Welsh. It was a TA division. Now, through the progress of time, all this altered, you see. A lot of people got posted, English, Scotch, all sorts, moved in there. But as I said, that comes later.
But you felt you were proud of being in the Welsh?
Oh, yes, I was very proud. I'm still proud.
Can you remember particular officers and NCOs?
Well, in Ireland, wait a minute now. When we were in Ireland, it was Major R.D. Harris from Swansea. That was one commanding officer. He was a quartermaster, sergeant at the beginning of the war, but as I said, the war, people got pushed up. He became a major. After he left, a Major Keeble took command. And then a Major C.L. Bannister, which was our commanding officer in in France. And he stopped with us practically to the end of the war, Major Bannister, C.L. Bannister. He came from New Haven. My personal command officer was Lieutenant Lutus. He came from Blackpool.
What was he like?
He was very good. Very good. I got to say this, our officers, NCOs, were absolutely marvellous. There was very little people get in charge or put on charges. They were all working together.
What was Major Keeble like?
Well, an incident happened there. I was driving a vehicle in Northern Ireland and they found a map under the seat and I was put on a charge for it. Because possession of a map or leaving a map unattended in Ireland was a criminal offence. So I had to go up in front of him on a charge at such and such a date that I left a map. I pleaded ignorance of the charge. He said, "What do you mean, pleading the charge?" I said, "The simple reason, I shouldn't be having a map, the NCO should have the map." So he had no charge. He couldn't charge me for that. And I was dismissed. That was that about that. Another thing what we were doing in Northern Ireland was working for farmers, using army vehicles for flax, because they grow a lot of flax in Ireland, because they make linen, the big linen factories there. And we used to work certain days, all day on a farm, loading flax up for these farmers and taking it to their barn or whatever they're going to do with it. And that was it for that, you see. Just things like that we were doing. Mm.
How did you get on with the farmers?
I got on very well with the farmers. In fact, I had a side of bacon off one of them.
Did you?
Oh, yes.
Why did he give you that?
Well, I put it in the cookhouse and we spread it amongst the men. Well, they used it for the men because bacon was rationed, as you obviously know, where it was, anyhow.
So you were quite popular for getting that way.
Well, I was, in that sense, yes.
What about your particular friends, you know, among the... your equals, as it were, you know. Did you sort of become a sort of a friendly unit, you know, do you have your buddies?
Oh, yes, everybody was friendly, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, you had to be. It was a team, wasn't it?
What about in your leisure time? What did you have to do there?
Well, you could go down to, cinemas to go to, you could go to cinemas. But you were restricted in Ireland, really, because... certain pockets, certain places. Now, Lurgan was a Catholic area. Bambridge was a Protestant area. Now, I got very friendly with a young lady over there. I'm sure all of us did, more or less. And she was a Catholic. Not that it made any difference to me, because religion, as far as I'm concerned, I can't think of the word at the moment. Religion in Ireland is
it's very important, isn't it?
It's very important, very important. It stays now. That's why you've got all the troubles. Basically, mm-hmm. That's what it's about. But religion, Catholic and Protestants don't get on to that in that sense. And of course, she was a Catholic, and she had a brother, and he came up to me one day and said, "I don't want to see my sister anymore." Because I don't agree with soldiers. My sister's a Catholic, so I left it at that, and that was that. But apart from that, there were cinemas to go to and different things. And we had a NAFI then. Of course, the NAFI got established.
What did the NAFI offer?
Oh, everything you wanted, really.
Like?
All your soaps and razor blades and your cigarettes and your drink and so forth and suppers, and which consisted of baked beans on toast, which was the primary supper which you had. If you didn't have any money, you went to the canteen, into the cookhouse at night, and they give you a cup of cocoa, and it was in a bucket, and it was stewed, and you could stick a spoon up, and it would stand upright without any help from anybody else. But that was a stable diet. If you didn't have money to go to the NAFI, you went to the cookhouse, they give you a cheese sandwich and a cup of cocoa. That was your supper. And a lot of blokes were short of money, obviously. Yeah. I've been short myself.
What was the food like in Ireland then, generally?
The food was very good. It was very good in Ireland. I'm going to say we had more or less peacetime rations at the beginning. When we were in Lurgan, we used to get tinned salmon. And even had fruit cocktails and things like that, you know, tinned fruit cocktails, pears and peaches and all forth and all that sort of thing. Well, it was quite good.
Did you think you had quite a sort of comfortable sort of billet, really?
We had a good billet in Ireland, yes. All converted factories, like, more or less, but we were converted, like, you see.
Did you wish that you'd been sent to France earlier? You know, were you all wanting then to go and see a bit of action?
Well, I didn't agree with a lot of things that went on with regards to polishing brasses and all this and boning toe caps on boots and that sort of thing. But looking back in hindsight, it was necessary for discipline. I mean, you had to do something. I mean, 250 men in a company, you've got to be occupied with doing something, you see. So that was probably one of the things to keep you occupied. Polishing brasses and boning boots and toe caps. You could see your face in them, you know.
Did you have kit inspections there?
Oh, yes, kit inspections, yes. Yes, every Saturday morning, more or less. And overseas parades.
What were the kit inspections like? Can you describe one?
All the kit laid out on the bed, your boots, spare uniform, all your shaving gear, and everything polished if necessary, buttons on the overcoat polished, your blankets folded up in a box.
What did you think about these inspections?
Well, nobody liked kit inspections, it's obvious, because it's especially on a Saturday morning. And another thing that used to upset a lot of chaps was that you used to have part one orders and part two orders, you see, or noticed. Well, it might go up 8 o'clock on a Friday night. Now, everybody got paid on a Friday, and they all went out on a Friday night. When they come back, looked at orders, the kit inspection tomorrow morning. And the kit's hanging on the wall, haven't been cleaned for a week or so, so you've got to turn around and work half the night to get your kit ready, unless you're on a charge for being that sort of thing, for not doing it, you see. So a lot of chaps beefed about that.
But everyone did it.
Oh, yes, you had to do it, that's it.
I mean, how well did the officers treat you? I mean, you know, there have been stories of sort of abuse of position and bullying.
Oh, no, our officers were perfect. Couldn't fault any of them. Mm. Of course, at that time, all the officers were English. There were no Welsh officers at all. Initially, there were Welsh officers, but they all got posted. But all our officers were English. Lieutenant Quarmby, Lieutenant Lutus, Captain Porry, all English, and First Class. First Class. I mean, I used to call my officer by his Christian name when nobody was about. had that understanding.
So you looked up to them, did you?
Yes, you were okay. Yeah, no problems.
What are they, so relationships between the ranks? I mean, you did sort of mix a bit.
Oh, we all mixed all together. Pretty good. Good mix all together. Mm. Yep.
So, I mean, you had your own messes, presumably.
Well, you have officers' mess, sergeants' mess, all that sort of business. I was common sapper myself. Mm-hmm. I was offered stripes that I didn't want them. I don't know why, but with hindsight, I should have taken them. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was offered 3 stripes eventually, but that comes later.
Yeah. So, looking back at your time in Northern Ireland, do you think they used your time well?
I think so. Basically, Northern Ireland overhaul was a training area. I mean, it was unrestricted, you weren't bombed, you weren't that sort of thing as it went on in this country. Good areas to train in, and plenty of countryside, which is obviously in a field army. You don't, I mean, if there was no such thing as, at that particular time, as fighting in houses or anything like that, or being trained for that sort of thing. Wide open spaces. You get lost, you go up in one of them mountains, and what do you call the Irish, not Scotch mist, Irish mist, you get lost quite easily.
So did you do a lot of training out on the mountains?
Yes, fitness and so on? More mountains, places like that.
Yeah. Did you do sort of exercises there?
All exercises, yep. Mm.
Can you remember any sort of particular areas you went to on exercise?
Well, one of the places, it was known as the Siege of Dungannon. Now, Dungannon was a small place. It's been featured quite a lot recently in the IRA and all this sort of business. But it was always known as the Siege of Dungannon because it seemed to be the central point of any exercise. You had to capture this castle in Dungannon, you know, that sort of thing. And
what sort of terrain was that?
Hilly terrain. Most of that part of Ireland we were in was hilly, you see. Of course, we'd come up, and we had a cross-country team. Then I was involved with that. I was in a cross-country team. And one of the particular times, it was a mountain there called the Camlock Mountain. We had to run up this mountain. That was the course. And run back down again and in as rapid time as possible. So, by and large, Northern Ireland was a good place to be, by and large.
Mm. Who did you compete against in these?
Well, inter-units, Welsh regiments, places like that, Royal Welsh Fusiliers, all Welsh regiments.
How do you think the local people living in Northern Ireland, what did they think about having you all there training?
Well, they accepted it, and, they accepted it. I mean, a lot of people had friends in Northern Ireland, a lot of chaps got married in Northern Ireland.
Did you have any idea where they were preparing you for, you know, what?
Well, we knew we were going somewhere. Obviously, I mean, it was common sense at the time to know that eventually we had to get into Europe at some time.
You didn't think you might be sent to Africa or the Far East? Or
well, we could have been sent anywhere at that particular time. In fact, there was some talk that we were going to the Far East, but that, as I said, is when we come back to this country.
So were there a lot of rumours there? I mean, that was
rumours flying about all the time. Rumours, a lot of postings went on. People got posted. The Welsh atmosphere over the period, people got posted and transferred and so forth. It became very cosmopolitan.
Did you Welsh people sort of resent that a little bit? Did you? Like,
not really, no, none of us. It didn't exist. Mm. We all got in together and that was it.
What do the officers say about rumours about where you might end up?
Well, the officers as wise as what we were. They didn't know any more than what we did, you see. I mean, most orders or anything like that comes from a higher echelon.
So you don't think they knew it was
Not the ordinary rank and file officers, no.
Right. When do you think the higher echelons, you know, decided where you were going? Do you think they'd planned you as part of the invasion?
I think so.
Because you were really being prepared for that sort of terrain in a way, weren't you?
Yeah.
Right. So how did you hear about when you moved out of Ireland?
Well, we moved from Northern Ireland in 1941, and we moved to a place called Hay near Hereford.
Right, so my own unit I'm talking about. Right, now. So you heard that you were going to Hay.
And the Welsh division was stretched over quite an area initially when we moved to Wales. On the borders, hey. But I think we moved there more or less as a holding area until another unit. Now, another unit was in southeast England, the 46th Division. They were moving out to the Middle East, and we took over from them.
So, what was your accommodation like in Hay?
Nissen huts.
Right.
We weren't there all that time.
Yeah.
We spent a Christmas 41 there, I think it was. Uh-huh. And during that time, we had about Christmas time, 1941, I think it was 41, we had a lot of ATS came down to spend Christmas with us. Mm-hmm. That was in 41, so it was rare as going on, look at it that way.
So that cheered you all up, did it?
Boy, it cheered us up, no way, because that was most of anywhere, Hay was, and there's another village again, and it was a big estate we were in. I had leave from there.
Uh-huh. So what was Christmas like? Tell me about that.
Very good. Very good Christmas.
What did they lay on for you?
Well, the normal Christmas fare. Officers served the meals. And NCOs served the meals. But nothing went on very much there. I don't think we had any exercises at all, because I think at that time we'd moved in that area because it was somewhere to put us while this other division moved out, you see, in southeast England, which was Kent.
So how long were you in Hay?
Oh, 4 months, 5 months.
Right. And from there you went,
To Maidstone. Again, my unit.
Right.
So then the division was centred in Maidstone, around Herne Bay, Maidstone, Sittingbourne, all those areas around there, you know.
So did you think you were getting nearer the action then?
Oh yes, definitely. The Southeastern Commander. Montgomery was in command at that particular time before he went to the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. So what did you think of being under Montgomery's command?
A good general, first class general, a man who knew his job and made sure he had the stuff before he'd done anything about it.
So he
I think, this is my own view of this, Montgomery was a man that decided himself that when the time was ripe, he'd do something about it, and insofar using men for particular actions. Now, previous generals like Auchinleck and all them sort of people were pressurised by Churchill to get on with the job, and I think personally myself all these things we went on weren't fully equipped to do the job they were told to do or trained to do. Now Montgomery, he was a man that everything had to be so before anybody done it, and I think the majority of us when we went into Europe we were going forward and not backward. And everybody had the full confidence in him. But as I said, the Americans were very jealous of Montgomery. A man who was egonostic in many ways. He thought a lot of himself, but he was a first-class general.
So the whole mood of going under his command was an upbeat one.
Yes, I think so, yes.
Right. Walter Cuss, end of reel 2.